Trump and Vance and them, you know, they just put themselves out there. They're more direct.
They have co-opted masculinity and they've politicized it.
I hate this term, the Joe Rogan of the left, that they need one. Joe Rogan is sort of left.
I do feel as though they are a distraction from class consciousness.
All of a sudden, everybody's talking about young men.
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 Young men.
More than half of the male vote nationwide went to Trump.
Men under 30.
Men under 30.
This was the testosterone podcast election.
$20 million to try and solve this big mystery.
$20 million.
$20 million.
Masculinity.
Bro culture.
Young men.
The manosphere.
Hi, my name's Richard Reeves, and I've spent the last few years thinking about, researching, and writing about the struggles that young men, and particularly working class men, are facing in America. Because of how the last election went, there's a lot more attention on young men than actually at any time since I've been working on this issue. But I've been wondering, with all of this discourse talking about men, how many people have actually talked to men? After all, the problems facing men are real and serious. Men account for 80% of deaths from suicide, 70% of overdose deaths, 70% of the homeless population in America. They've fallen behind in education, in the labor market, and other major metrics. And it's young men in particular, those aged between 20 and 30, who are feeling the sharpest impact of many of these changing ideas and paradigms about men's roles, opportunities, and their outcomes. So I had a pretty wide-ranging conversation with five young men about their views on dating, mental health, toxic masculinity, and of course, politics.
I am a carpenter and a musician.
I was a former teacher, and now I'm a union organizer.
I'm currently working on an undergraduate degree.
I've been bouncing around different part-time jobs and internships.
I've done electrical, I've done construction.
Most recently as a substitute teacher, and now working at the front desk at a tennis club.
Moving, cleaning, any type of physical labor.
Some of what they said might make you uncomfortable, but the reality is, whether you're a progressive or a conservative, both sides need to confront their problem with young men, or a large share of the population is not going to have a political home. That means they might turn to more extreme ideologies. And meanwhile, their problems just get worse. So let's get into it.
Did you vote in past elections, and can you tell us how you voted?
In 2016, I voted for Trump over Hillary. Before then, you know, I didn't really vote, but I did support Obama in 2012 and 2008. We definitely went Trump in 2020. Not like I didn't support him. I don't support anything political, you know. I believe that I'm just a working man in America. You know, the president don't matter for me. They ain't gonna pass some crazy executive order that's gonna change my life or anything.
It's all happening.
Just smoke and mirrors for me, you know what I'm saying?
I voted in this election. I voted red down the ballot, and I voted in the primary. Before that, I was too young.
The last time I voted was 2012 for Obama. It was the first time I could vote. After that, I kind of felt as though, you know, politics and politicians were kind of blending into a uniform party overall, and things weren't fundamentally changing.
All throughout high school, I used to be a Republican, but my family got affected by the 2017 Trump tax cuts.
You got affected by it in what way? In a good way?
In a bad way.
In a bad way, okay.
Yeah, and I was just thinking to myself, like, who is this billionaire to lie to us and say, well, I'm gonna fight for the truck driver, I'm gonna fight for the carpenter and the middle class person, when he's not any of those things?
So I've just had a kind of cynical view on general elections. You know, I really don't think the general election matters that much unless you live in a handful of states. And I just used a write-in. I voted for local measures, but I don't really feel seen or heard by anyone in the government.
Let's look at some economic realities. In the top 20% of the income distribution, both women and men are flourishing on almost every measure. Growing wealth, longer lifespans. But outside of this top bracket, over the last 50 years, the trajectories for women and men have been very different. Women today are working more and for better pay than ever before. There's still a gender pay gap, but it's narrowing, which is great news. Men, on the other hand, are working less, often for worse pay. Real wage levels for many men are trending down. I wanted to know if the guys in this room were feeling the effects of these economic trends.
On average, do you think that men are having it harder or women are having it harder in the economy today? I'll start with you, Joel.
I'd say vaguely men, but I'd say vaguely in the...
Why?
And sort of barely.
Why is that?
A big problem when you send manufacturing jobs off to other countries is that they are mostly blue-collar jobs. I don't entirely mean to stereotype, but...
Manufacturing skews very male. That's just a fact.
Everybody's getting screwed, but I think If you're talking 50.01, then I think it'd be men.
Personally, like, including myself, I can think of like five or six of my friends who are guys who have college degrees and who have not been able to find work since graduating. Some of them even with like advanced degrees. I cannot say the same about any of my girlfriends. I can't think of a single one who's unemployed, you know? And part of it is just like, I think women at this age are naturally risk averse, so they're not gonna like leave a job if they don't have something lined up. There are a lot of different factors, but it's just an interesting thing to think about.
Obviously, I work with a lot of people. They tell me about their wages, their job, and women are definitely doing better in terms of like white collar work. But on the lower end, there's people, of course, that are struggling and people that, you know, need help. And then there's people that just have nothing. And, you know, people that just have nothing, I see that being primarily women on the lower end. But we don't have the same opportunity as we used to, like you brought up with manufacturing. I mean, that's a really great point.
I also think when it comes to college education, I don't know the exact number, but I'm pretty sure more women go to college
nowadays.
Yeah,
it's like 60-40. Female, male now?
When you're having jobs that are looking for degrees, the percentage of men that don't have a degree versus the percentage of women that do have a degree probably affects it.
Labor force participation for men has dropped 7% in the last 50 years. A third of men with only a high school education are not working today, whereas in the 60s, almost all of them were working. And that's partly because male-dominated industries, production, manufacturing, construction, transportation, they've all been particularly vulnerable to a 1-2 punch of more free trade and automation. And loss of a job isn't just about the loss of income. For many decades, being able to find a well-paying job and provide for a family was an essential part of the script that men could look to for how to be in the world. But now things have changed, both for the better, with women having more career opportunities, but also for the worse, with the middle-class standard of living becoming increasingly difficult to afford, sometimes even on two salaries. And the men that I talk to, they say that even though the world's changed, the script hasn't really caught up. It's almost like they're being cast in a modern-day HBO drama with a screenplay from Leave It to Beaver.
You know, Wally, shaving is just one of the outward signs of being a man. It's a whole lot more important to try to be a man inside first.
There's still a feeling of like having to be a provider despite, you know, the economic situation currently where that's becoming increasingly harder.
Especially for working class men.
Yeah.
Do you all agree with that, that there is this, still this expectation on men to be doing well economically?
Absolutely.
Even as it's harder for men to do well economically in many cases?
I think the expectation is there, but I think it's less of an external pressure and more among men. There's a sense of inferiority.
Ah, so you think it's more about almost like the competition?
I do, yeah.
But I want to get to this change thing. Maybe Chris, you and Joel, you both talked about your grandfathers. And I think you both talked about them providing like for their family. So how do you think it's different now? How do you think the expectations on men are different now to the way of your grandfather? Are they better or worse?
Worse because the economy, you know, things is more expensive now. And our area, the DMV has a lot to do with it too. Like this is a high earning area. Cost of living is through the roof. But says my grandfather growing up down in Georgia, South Carolina, I don't even know what their rent was. It's probably somebody's car insurance.
But
up
women
here.
Weren't earning as much back then, right? Now, so they were more reliant on him, probably.
I never seen my grandmother work at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, my grandmother never worked. She was always at the house with me or if I was in school. And my grandfather made enough
so
money.
So she didn't need him economically in a way maybe that women hopefully don't today.
She just knew that he was going to take care of everything.
Okay. Aiden.
I think men, yes, due to, you know, chivalry and traditional gender roles. Yeah, they are expected to be providers, but I don't care if my future wife makes more money than me. That doesn't matter.
Do any of you care? Would any of you worry?
I would love that.
I would love that, exactly.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Really?
That'd be great.
Yeah. I'm proposing ASAP.
As long as she's in the union.
Okay, so this is interesting, right? But then we ask this question. Do you think that the guy should pay on the first date?
Oh, yeah, yes. Maybe the first few.
On the first date.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. First few.
Let's explore, right? So there's tension here. All of you said you would be quite happy being in a relationship with a woman that earns more than you, but yes, all of you said that you should pay for the first date, and you said, like, that's really interesting to me.
I think it's more of an acknowledgement, like, I've asked you out.
So if she asked you out, it might be the other way around?
I mean, maybe, yeah. If she asked me out, I don't think that's ever happened to me, but like, if a girl was like,
me neither.
For whatever reason,
I really want you to go out.
It hasn't happened to any of us, by the way, so I don't know why we're all laughing.
men's issues with expectations can work the other way too. In a society following the old gender script, men are not only saddled with expectations, increasingly impossible to meet, but themselves are forced to expect less from certain institutions that are supposed to support everyone.
They're going to put you on the spot here a bit, Darren, because I know from some of the prep calls that you had some difficulties within a relationship. So we're here talking about dating, but let's talk about how relationships can end. I know you've had some personal experience with that, if you'd be willing to share.
It was an awful situation, honestly, because she actually ended up, assaulting me. So I have, a bite mark. I even recorded it because she had whipped me with, a hair blow dryer before. And I showed it to the judge to try to get a protective order. And, he just laughed at the fact that I was taking back a hair dryer because obviously I don't have any hair. But, as a judge, when I'm saying, hey, this person assaulted me, a domestic violence situation, for him to, make that comment was really painful. And ultimately, I got denied the protective order and she was able to stay in the house and, just continue being around me after assaulting me, after emotionally and mentally tormenting me this whole time.
It sounds like you feel like the courts didn't treat you fairly.
Not at all. I had blood on my arm when I went into the to go get my protective order against her. And they said, this is going to last for a day. She, 2 days before she moved out, put a protective order on me saying that I was making Instagram posts about her. I was sleeping on the couch this whole time. She said I was busting in her door every day, verbally harassing her. And the judge took that and said, okay, great. Your protective order is granted for 7 days like that. And like I said, I walked in with blood on my arm and got one for 1 day.
Darren's story is emblematic, I think, of the problems on one side of the political stalemate over issues of sex and gender. Liberals refuse to accept that gender gaps can now run both ways, and they're too quick to label male problems as individual failings, symptoms of toxic masculinity. Conservatives, on the other hand, do appear to be more sensitive to the struggles of boys and men, but too often as a justification for turning back the clock and restoring traditional roles. So the left turns its back on boys and men, and the right turns back the clock on women and girls. As you can imagine, these guys had a lot to say about both of these problems.
What I'll say about Democrats not only abandoning men, but I also think they kicked them into the curb and spit on them. You're telling men not to be men. You're telling men they can't watch football because it's sexist or UFC because it's sexist. Yeah, men are into fighting. That's why Trump is there, because Trump isn't abandoning us.
The Democratic Party has abandoned men. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Does everyone else?
Yeah.
But I think what's worse is the Republican Party actively lying to men. They play the culture war. They don't want to talk about who could actually be exploiting them, like billionaires, corporations, like trans people are not hiking my credit card interest rates. They did not keep my wages stagnant. You're focusing on the wrong 1%.
You're a right-wing man, Joel. What do you think?
I was going to say...
Just threw you under the bus.
To your point, yeah.
No, sorry. I had to get that out, man.
It's an open forum.
Go on.
Yeah, I
go
might
on,
have
man.
To say a point against...
Speaking as a transphobe.
Speaking as a transgender myself. But, no.
Yeah, crazy.
No, the point you made earlier about how... sort of the working class people on both sides, there really is no need to hate each other. I was thinking about that recently. The divide in America really should be class. Mm-hmm. Work versus, the elite. Mm-hmm. I can't see any conceivable way how in 2024 black people and white people can hate each other, or Mexicans or Latinos or whoever to hate each other. Really, we should be hating the people making us hate each other.
Yes.
Now, you can call it the Illuminati or Hydra. I call them Democrats, but besides that, no, I'm kidding.
We're not cutting the corporate tax rate and giving them the ability to exploit their workers, but...
But on the culture point, though, right, wouldn't you say it does go both ways?
In which regard?
Don't you think on the left it could be a bit of a tendency to get women to blame men? It's patriarchy, it's toxic masculinity.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Isn't there an argument that it's actually equally true on the left?
I wouldn't say it's equal. I would say the right absolutely plays more into the culture war than the left does.
I would say the reason why we do that now is if you look at, I'd say, the 90s to the early 2000s, the Republicans at least weren't playing into the culture war thing. So we lost. We lost for a long time. And honestly, I think we still might. I think we did lose. And I think it's going to take a while for sort of Judeo-Christian morals to come back into over 50%.
How would you know if they had come back?
I guess we're so open nowadays, would kind of be a way to describe it. We aren't in ancient Judea 2,000 years ago,
right,
in a way, which I think is fine. I think it's the world we live in. I don't need women right. covering themselves.
Well, like, very few people would want to go back to.
No, I don't want to either. I like America.
Chris, let me ask you whether you think the Democrats or the Republicans speak best to men right now.
I'd probably say the Republicans. I really can't answer it because I don't pay attention. None of them affect me. But I see more of the Republicans, whatever they're talking about, because Trump and Vance and them, you know, they just put themselves out there. They're more direct. You see Joe Biden is just some old guy. You can barely hear him. You know what I'm saying? You don't know what the hell he's talking about. And then you got Trump, who's going to come direct more just to where I understand it.
I do agree that I feel like Republicans or conservatives have signaled to men, younger men, you have a place here. If you come with us, you'll have fun. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be expressive. You can open yourself. You don't have to be polite. You don't have to pretend to be someone you're not. You know, you don't have to be restrained. I don't believe it's the way that they funnel men into this corner is the best. I mean, you'll watch a video on YouTube about working out and then Andrew Tate will pop up eventually. Or then some more right-wing comedian will pop up. And then you'll have, you know, Joe Rogan, and then you'll have Ben Shapiro, and then you'll just be exposed to this whole manosphere.
I hate this term, the Joe Rogan of the left, that they need one. Joe Rogan is sort of left. He endorsed Bernie Sanders in 2016 and 2020.
All I've seen in my lifetime is Democrats conceding more and more and more and more.
Especially on men's issues?
Especially on men's issues. And they're just like, you know, slowly like shrinking the circle of issues that they actually care about to align with things that aren't going to get their donors pissed off at them, you know? I love the point, though, about Joe Rogan endorsing Bernie Sanders twice, because anytime somebody who appeals to young men across the board rises to a level where they might actually reach any sort of real power, Democrats just kneecap them.
The Democrats don't have a narrative when the Republicans do. The Republicans are immigrants, trans people, a bunch of minority communities. They're the reason why your life is bad. The Democrats don't have that. They have, oh, we're going to tinker around the edges of the status quo.
Well, wouldn't they say that it's the billionaires? It's the
I don't think the corporate wing of the party would.
They're sitting in the room.
Yeah, they're sitting in the room. The Democrats have as much corporate money as the Republican Party does.
Do you think that the Democrats have become too much the women's party?
I don't even think you can really say that. Like, I think there are probably more women that vote Democrat than men.
That's true. Absolutely true.
But I think Democrats are just completely empty and lack any real spine when it comes to any issues whatsoever. Republicans, they do the things they campaigned on. For better or worse, I think most of the policies they implement are just objectively evil and create more human suffering than, you know, we already have. But they actually do them, and it speaks to voters. If you're the kind of person that thinks illegal immigrants are causing all the problems in this country, then you like what's going on right now. You like that people are being randomly kidnapped off
the
street.
There's an authenticity to it.
They're not telling you one thing and doing another. Democrats, on the other hand, they tell you that they want to do all these progressive things. They tell you they support, you know, lowering the cost of healthcare and education. They tell you they support, you know, raising the minimum wage. And then what happens when they get in office? Biden can't even get his own senators to approve raising the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour. Like, the fact that that's still the federal minimum wage in this year, 2025, is a joke.
What they were talking about really was a sense of authenticity. There's a high degree of respect among men, I think especially for young men, for men who say what they think and stand by it.
He's been insanely consistent his entire life. He's basically been saying the same thing, been for the same thing his whole life.
That kind of codes as a kind of masculine virtue.
The Republicans, they have co-opted masculinity and they've politicized it. You see it in, like, UFC. Like, I'm on the left. I like watching UFC. I think it's very entertaining. I think it's a very skill-filled sport. But I don't want to see Trump and RFK Jr. and nerdy Mike Johnson walking to the octagon. Like, people...
You kind of do want to see Mike Johnson do that.
I don't want to see him anywhere.
Nowhere has all of this mess played out more than in one specific phrase.
What do you think of the term toxic masculinity? Good and useful term, or a bad and unhelpful term?
Who's answering that?
I'm just going to see who wants to take toxic masculinity.
I'll go first.
This is how we find out who's the most toxic.
Well, I hope I ain't too toxic. But for me, I don't even believe in nothing like that. I believe a man is supposed to be a man. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to be masculine. No matter if another man feels offended by it, you know, everybody ain't going to respect you. Everybody ain't going to like you. If a woman's saying that a man's doing too much or something, he's just trying to be a man, you know?
Or he might be being a jerk or a predator or whatever.
I just, right? So what do they mean by toxic masculinity?
Right, well, that's the question.
Okay, yeah, I never understood it.
At one point, this term toxic masculinity had a very narrow and concrete, quite academic definition. And it wasn't actually created by kind of liberal academic elites. It came from a group of men, specifically men driven by a kind of spiritual movement in the 80s and 90s that was a response to feminism in many ways. Until around 2015, the phrase warranted just a few footnotes, really, in academic journals. But with the rise of Donald Trump and the Me Too movement, progressives brought this term toxic masculinity into everyday use. Suddenly it was everywhere, thousands of mentions, impossible to ignore. But the term's very rarely defined, and it now seems to refer to any male behavior that the user of the term disapproves of, from the tragic to the trivial. Toxic masculinity has been blamed, among other things, for mass shootings, gang violence, rape, online trolling, climate change, the financial crisis, Brexit, the election of Donald Trump, even an unwillingness to wear a mask during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Vaguely speaking, it's overused. I mean, they said the term boys will be boys is offensive now in the same sort of way. And it's like, you know, guys want to drink and punch each other. I don't get it. That's toxic. I mean, I can sort of get the idea of, you know, when Prohibition was coming to America, the idea is that the man makes the money, and instead of spending on his family, he spends it on whiskey. You're like, oh, and then he beats his wife. Like, yeah, I guess that's being toxically masculine, but I don't think that a wholesale exists anymore. I just think it's a term, yeah, to put down men who want to be men.
I'm not into makeup, that might be shocking. That's just toxic.
That's just regular toxic.
Before 2016, before this dressed up word, you know, you'd have, this guy's an asshole. You know, he's overly aggressive. He's just, way too forward, or he's creepy, or whatever it might be. So you call him an asshole, you call him weird, you know, whatever. But now it's toxic masculinity, and then there's like a whole bunch of other opinions that people can just lump into toxic masculinity. But when you call someone an asshole, you kind of just know what they're talking about.
They
right
need to
there.
Go back
yeah,
to just
good.
Saying
all right.
that. That's a lot easier.
Say that again.
They should just go back to just calling guys a-holes. Like,
right. I'd like to be called.
So conclusion of this debate. Yeah. Everyone's an asshole.
We should just
no one's toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. Mission accomplished.
I don't find this response from the guys here surprising at all. Very few men or boys are going to react well to the idea that there's something toxic inside of them that needs to be exorcised. I didn't try to raise my sons to be not toxic. That's not a very empowering message. I think, if anything, it's the opposite, that the term toxic masculinity will sort of drive more boys and men away to the online manosphere, where they'll be reassured, at least, that there's nothing wrong with them, and it's actually the liberals who are out to get them. But also, at a deeper level, what this means is that we miss the opportunity to address the real structural problems facing many boys and men, when instead we focus on the toxic flaws in those individual men. So if they're depressed, we say it's because they don't express their feelings. If men get sick, it's because they won't go to the doctor. If they fail at school, it's because they don't try hard enough. And that's a very far cry from how the term was originally meant to be used.
I think the term itself comes from a good intention, which is like, how can we create a healthier society for everyone involved? I think most of us would agree that there's a severe mental health problem in this country. And a lot of the time it manifests itself in men.
80% of suicide,
right, the suicide rate,
drug poisoning,
rates of addiction, much higher among men.
Much
higher.
I'd like to dig in a bit more on just how the mental health issues are kind of playing out differently for men and women. I mean, I shared some stats earlier around the much higher suicide rates among men. Actually, it's gone up most among young men. It's really men under 30 where we've seen the rise. The rise in drug poisoning deaths has been mostly men. Substance abuse is mostly men. And so it's not to say there aren't issues that go the other way, but I'd just like any more reflections that you've got on how you think the mental health stuff is playing out. We talked a bit about the lack of male psychologists and your counselor. So maybe we should start with you, Ed, and talk a bit about your own experience.
Yeah, so I'm in recovery. I'm sober. I've been sober from primarily alcohol for 2.5 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's a little tough being a 24-year-old in recovery. Having the weird eyes and the weird questions.
Well, I haven't had a drink for 5 years. It's not much easier in your 50s.
Oh, congrats. Nice.
Thank you.
But no, it was just, I'd gone through personally a whole, you know, string of personal losses. And unfortunately, I turned to alcohol to cope with my issues mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I needed all the help I could get.
I think that the whole area of mental health gets, if we're not careful, it gets coded as a bit female.
Yeah.
It's what women do. The websites look quite female.
Boys don't cry. all that stuff, you know, puff out your chest kind of shit. I don't know. Yeah. Boys can't go to therapy. I think everybody in their life should go to therapy. They should try it once.
Like Darren said, most of the medical field is all women.
Well, it's certainly shifting that way. And mental, unlike psychology, therapy, social work, they're just becoming massively more female.
Jobs like these, increasingly dominated by women, fall into the industries that I call HEAL, health, education, administration, and literacy. If we're going to do right by the men in our society, we need to both protect workers in traditionally male industries and help men adapt to current economic realities by encouraging them to transition into these HEAL jobs. We know a lot about STEM initiatives for women, and they've helped massively. We've tripled the share of STEM workers who are women. But we now need the same type of mass effort for young men to encourage them into education and health. I'm very proud of the fact that my son is a fifth grade teacher. And gender gaps can't be addressed without also addressing class gaps. While the gender pay gap has narrowed by 19 percentage points in the last 40 years, the class pay gap between the top and the middle has widened by 12 percentage points. There's a moment really I want to leave you with, stuck with me and I found inspiring. After we'd wrapped up, the five young men who disagreed with each other pretty strongly, they sat and shared a bite to eat, exchanged numbers, and they just hung out with each other, not as representatives of different political ideologies or as enemies, but as fellow young men trying to figure things out. And as we discussed, a lot of young men don't have a script anymore for how they should be in the world. Quite often they know what they shouldn't do, but they don't know what they should do. And so what we need now are some new economic and social scripts which allow for a positive vision of masculinity that is also compatible with gender equality. If we're going to write a new script for men that matches modern society, it's not going to come out of finding the perfect influencer. It's going to come out of messy conversations like this one. So thank you for watching, and hopefully, no matter what side of the political spectrum you land on, you got something out of this conversation. I know I did. More Perfect Union wants to have more conversations like this, not just about and with young men, but on all sorts of themes. Send them a line at stories@perfectunion.us. And don't forget to like and subscribe to their channel.